Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Hi, and welcome to Off the Menu. I'm Lisa Endicott, president of Endicott PR. On today's show, I'll be speaking with Shannon Nguyen, one of the legendary restaurateurs in Dallas and Fort Worth. Join me as we learn more about Shannon and his history.
Well, today I'm really excited. We're speaking to prolific and iconic restaurateur Shannon Nguyen, and he is the name behind several restaurants that you know and love: Rodeo Goat, Flying Fish, Flying Saucer Draft Emporium, Meddlesome Moth in the Design District, and Miriam's Cocina Latina, which is, I love Chef Miriam. But good morning, Shannon. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, for those who may or may not know you, they know your restaurants, but they may not know your early life and sort of your roots. Can you tell us a little bit about what growing up in Texas was like for you?
Well, Texas per se, I didn't know any different, so it was not a big deal. But I grew up about a mile from where I live right now. I've never lived anywhere else for any length of time. I grew up as the fourth child of parents who were living a pretty interesting lifestyle. They were kind of like F. Scott and Zelda on the bad side and Walt Disney on the good side. And as a result, I was born into a really dynamic family through no choice of my own that was very active. My grandfather was a lead attorney in the state, founded the Texas Bar Association, founded a big law firm here in Dallas, Gardier Wynn. It became Gardier Wynn. It was Wynn Jaffe Tinsley. My uncle, my father's brother, founded the Dallas Cowboys. And my daddy, founded Six Flags after he had built Wynwood down in Oak Cliff. And so I thought that as a kid just was the way it was, I grew up going to St. Mark's and then gravitated over to Highland Park because they had girls. I was too shy a kid to take advantage of all the trappings that I was involved, I was surrounded with. I didn't think it was peculiar. I didn't think it was special. As a kid, you just go with the flow. So I didn't take advantage. Looking back, I wish I'd taken advantage to my Six Flags connection more than I had, but I didn't know how. By the time I came along, everybody just, the family taught me. My parents didn't teach me anything how to utilize all these gifts. So, that in time changed. That affluence became less as I grew older. I grew up in an alcoholic family. My father died young, at age 65 with stroke and heart attack. My mother died young at age 69, same thing. My brothers and sister and I were pretty much on our own. And I didn't have any money. Everybody thinks that, you're a win, you have lots of money. Well, they didn't leave me any of it. But I say that my grandfather and grandmother my grandfather was called the King of the Boomtown Lawyers. And he traveled from town to town doing legal work in exchange for little pieces of oil deals. So I did get a little cash flow when they passed away that kind of kept me afloat during my years when I was trying to decide what it is I wanted to do. I went to Trinity University and graduated with a degree in biology. The most I ever used, I was going to be a veterinarian. And the only time I ever used that training was when I saved baby birds in the backyard. You know, women were allowed to all of a sudden go to vet school at Texas A&M. So my hopes were dashed. So I started, you know, I took a lot of film classes and started writing screenplays and making short films, and really wanted to do that. And I finished my first screenplay and I showed it to my big brother, who I thought was a good sounding board. And he told me that I needed to find another profession, in so many words. And right there was a big turning point in my life, because I shouldn't have listened to him. I should have just kept going. I secretly direct almost everything I watch in film or television. So I probably could have had a good life there. But while trying to decide what I was going to do, my favorite bar in Dallas burned down, the Stoney P. And I didn't have any place else to go. And if genetically anything was passed to me from my parents, I realized that I had a good eye for design. And I traveled enough through Europe with a backpack after I graduated from college. And I discovered a building in Paris called the Pompidou. And it was utilizing factory pieces of everything was exposed. All the air plenums were exposed. All the pipes were exposed. Nothing was covered up. It was very industrial. And I decided that I was going to build a place and make it industrial on the inside. And so I opened the 8-0 in 1980. And I didn't know how to open a cash register. And to this day, never have.
Wow.
Don't know how to open a cash register. I had no idea what a fry later was. Had to depend on others to tell me if we were making any money. And I was off. So, Dallas was compared to today, was a sleepy little place. The levels of cafe society were very minimal. There may be two or three layers. Now they're over 100 layers of cafe society. There are different strains of interest and influence going all through the community. Back then, it was kind of like shooting fish in a barrel. And so I opened this place, the 8-0, and it took off. And then I went out, hey, I can do this. Are we making any money? Yeah, we're making some money. So I opened Nostromo next. And it took off like lightning. And it was a higher end white tablecloth restaurant over on Travis Street. They just tore the building down. It was the old oriental rug place, Persian carpet cleaning. And Thursday nights at Nostromo were through the roof.
Legendary.
Man. and then I decided that we didn't have a good nightclub in the city that showed progressive music. And so I rented a building over on Greenville Avenue, which was gigantic, 16,000 feet, and I built Tango. And I was pretty much bulletproof, I thought. I didn't need to know how the economics worked. I just design them and build them and come up with the design, and somebody else would do all that. Well, eventually that thinking caught up with me. After I opened Tango, I opened the Rio Room, which was behind Nostromo. 2,000 square foot, members only nightclub. Ross Perot Jr. was a member. I mean, all these people that would eventually become somebody in the city were like joining this little tiny nightclub dance place. And I remember both Nostromo and the Rio Room, you had to wear a jacket to get in. I did that because my father, when he would take us to the 21 Club in New York, men had to wear a jacket. So I thought, I'll show them. And so I made everybody wear a jacket. And we had jackets there for people to wear that didn't want to wear a jacket. I'll never forget, the Rolling Stones were playing in Dallas, 1981. Secret Service had showed up to case the place. And so we knew that Mick and the boys were going to be coming to Nostromo after the concert. And everybody, word got out that the Stones were going to be at Nostromo because of who had already come, you know? Mm-hmm. Led Zeppelin had already come, so we knew the Stones were going to be there. Everybody got in, and it was tiny. I mean, Nostromo was 3,500 square feet. That's as big as a Flying Fish is right now. Everybody showed up, took their seats, and didn't leave. Didn't order either, just sat there. But the Secret Service, you know, showed up, guys with little ear things over their ears, came in. So when's Mick coming in? They wouldn't talk to us. All of a sudden, the back door opens. In walks this little bitty man about that high. And he was Asian. He was the ambassador to the Philippines. That's who was showing up.
Oh.
No Rolling Stones.
Oh.
So, you know, after that, I didn't really care who came. I had promised myself I was never going to, you know, start the gossip that ends in disaster. But that's the kind of thing that back then in Dallas was, you know, when John Entwistle took the stage, when we had a band play at Nostromo, the old Chicken Hawks. It was like nothing that anybody had ever seen before. Anyway, I then opened a restaurant called Mexico. A Rocco Oyster Bar came next. And then Mexico. And then the great savings and loan debacle of Texas happened.
I remember.
Where all the banks who were lending money too freely were forced to close down by state regulators, federal regulators. And all of a sudden my bank said, hey, you've got these notes out there, you got to pay up. I went, I don't have that money. Back then you could just sign a piece of paper and go about your merry way. Well, it was unsecured. Well, I didn't have the money and we were paying our payments, but they didn't care. They wanted their money. So one by one, we closed them down and I pretty much disappeared. I went to San Francisco and opened a restaurant for Boz Skaggs called the Blue Light Cafe. Kind of relaxed. About that time, the woman that would be my first wife got pregnant. And I found out I was going to be a father. Came back to Dallas. Opened the Fast and Cool Club on Greenville Avenue. It took off. Then we opened the one in Houston. It took off. And so I was kind of back in the chips. Then I realized, you know, something's got to give. I was drinking too much. There were too many free drugs roaming around. So in 1988, I gave up booze. That was the end of the first half of my restaurant life. It was only 10 years, but it was what I call the half, because I created a lot of restaurants in a short period of time. I then got sober and everything changed. I started learning about how a P&L works. I learned how a balance sheet worked. I understood what it was like. And I kind of created a instrument that I've used to this day on how to raise money and how to distribute money to investors. And I built it because I didn't understand what I was doing and I wanted everything to be built on a cash basis. I didn't ever want to borrow money again after what happened with the Texas, with the savings and loan debacle. I swore I would never walk into a bank again and borrow any money. So I, you know, started the 8-0 number two, which was in the quadrangle as well. The first 8-0 was in the quadrangle, and then the second was in the quadrangle as well. And, but I did it sober. So I opened up the 8-0 with murals on the walls, and local artists had painted, and it just blew the roof off. And pretty much after that, I just followed my nose and opened up 8-0s where I thought they would work. Open one in Houston, open one in Fort Worth. And then in 1995, Ed Bass said, "Hey, would you mind doing something with this building we have over here? It's too pretty a building to not use." And so I opened up the first Flying Saucer in 1995.
And I'm looking out on it this morning. It's pretty
are
cool.
Are you in that now, Howard?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, as you know, it soon, you know, 20 years later became the Bird Cafe, but the Flying Saucer was the first in a string of 16 that we would eventually build throughout Texas, Arkansas, Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina, Missouri, and Kansas. And people say, why did you build them there? And I said, because that's where the highway went. That's where Southwest Airlines flew to. I mean, it was easy. Well, how did you know you wanted to build one there? Because nobody had any beer. And we knew that we could go into a town and bring in good beers that nobody had ever seen before. Anyway, so that's kind of brings us up to 8 years ago when I opened the first Rodeo Goat in Fort Worth, 10 years ago, maybe. First Rodeo Goat in Fort Worth, over off of West 7th. We now have soon to be 8 Rodeo Goats, opening 7 and 8 in the next month. And looking at other locations now to do. In the meantime, opened up Meddlesome Moth about 11 years ago down in the Design District. As soon as they allowed us to get off of the tollway at Oak Lawn, and then opened Miriam's Vecina Latina across from Cloudwood Park. So probably not doing any innovative new concepts, but rolling out what we've got already that works.
Well, I think they all really work, and they each are great, and I frequent many of them. I love the fact that we've learned about what you've done as far as your financial, like creating best practices. I think that's fantastic. Can you talk a little bit about your design, like how you design, like a little bit about your process? Because I know I've run into you in the Design District, and I never know. I always want to ask you, you know, what are you doing? What are you getting ready to concept? But you've always had this flair and mystique. What a cool guy. And growing up going to Hockaday and then being a reporter, going to 8-0, so many of the sports reporters hang out. I feel like that was kind of my entry point. But your design is always so cool. And
Dale Hansen would come in, have 3 drinks, leave, go do the sports, come back and have 3 more.
Yep. You'd walk in.
You know, used to, I would go to New York or Paris to see what was happening because I would get ideas. And I would go up and kind of study what people were doing and wondered whether, you know, get inspired. Because Dallas was so, you know, it was a quiet little conservative community that really didn't take many chances. Now you have people coming in from all over the world to create design. So I would go other places and look to get inspiration. Now, because I'm older, I have, you know, 6 kids, 3 grandkids. I don't want to travel. You know, I don't want to go. I will go on occasion to look at what other people are doing, but I found that it serves me best to use my own instinct. So over the course of the last 40 years, I've developed an eye for what I think is honest, not designed for design's sake. You know, I really don't like walking into fake taverns that have been made to look like some posh Chicago tavern where nothing in it is authentic. Most everything I do design-wise, if you walk into Meddlesome Moth, everything in there pertains to Dallas, whether it's Jane Mansfield or the Green Men or the Texas Kid or the stained glass windows. Everything there has Dallas roots and was carefully commissioned to go on the walls. But, you know, I walk into places, I'm not going to mention any names, which have got these fabricated interiors that have absolutely no relevance to either their community or, you know, there is no thought put behind what goes on the walls or what goes into the food. You know, it's just like, it's just boring. So I try to stay away from that and try to keep things fun and honest and, have relevance. Pretty much that. If it's trendy, I don't do it. I mean, I've never put a mac and cheese on any menu I've ever done. You know, I never had sliders. I never had any of the cutesy little things. I've never added lobster to a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You know, it just, so that's kind of our, my credo on the design. I'm amazed that people think that a flying fish has got design elements. It does, but you know, I like for the community to participate. That's the reason we have the Billy Bass Adoption Center, where people can bring their Billy Bass in, or the photographs. I think it's always important to allow people to have their ego in a space because they can participate. They can bring their picture in. They can point at their picture. That's my grandson. That's my son. That's me. And see their picture on the wall and offer them, you know, good food at a reasonable price.
And I like that you've got the Brad Sham burger at Rodeo Goat.
Well, just so happened I was sitting next to Brad at a dinner, at a fundraiser for Jimmy Carter or something, and we were sitting at the table and he introduces himself to me and I went, "Oh, you're Brad Sham." We had the best time talking, and he gave me his card. And we were getting ready to open up the first Rodeo Goat. And I said, "Hey, can I name a burger after you? You're like ubiquitous on Sunday afternoons, listening to you drive when I'm driving back from the lake, listening to the Cowboy game. Can I name a hamburger after you?" He went, "I'd be honored." And so, I think I asked him what he wanted on it. He said, "Oh, it doesn't make any difference, but anything you want." And, so I designed the burger and we opened with it and somebody called me up frantically. I think it was Nancy Nichols said, "You can't have a Brad Sham burger with bacon on it. He's Jewish." And I said, "Oh my God. Okay. Well, let me call Brad." And I called him. He said, "Oh hell, I eat bacon. Don't worry about it." So yeah, we have some zingers coming up in the opening of the new Rodeo Goat that I'm not gonna tell anybody about yet. But I've named another burger after a friend of mine that's a writer. That's gonna be a fun burger.
Fun. I might know who that is, but I won't guess. I want to be surprised.
Well, like the old Whitney in Fort Worth is named after Whitney Hyder's son's band. You know, Whitney Hyder's an old friend of mine from Fort Worth. So we named it the O. Whitney. The White Animal Burger in Dallas is named after my old best friend growing up, Kevin Gray's band, the White Animals. So, I mean, there are lots of little stories in there. And I also try to weave stories in each rodeo goat about how rodeo goat got its name. So on every menu, there's a different story that features the how the restaurant got. They're all lies, of course, but...
It's your own tall tales.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I can't believe we're at the 25th anniversary mark of Restaurant Week. And, you know, do you have any thoughts on kind of where we're going in Dallas versus Fort Worth? Any musings? I know you have more things coming through the pike, but, you know, for those people that have been here a long time or those people that are just migrating here, you know, any thoughts on where we are and where we're going?
Well, people like to tell me there's no difference between Dallas and Fort Worth, but there's a huge difference between Dallas and Fort Worth. The market is just a different market, period. When we opened the Bird Cafe, we opened with sweetbreads on the menu. And you don't know how many times we got it sent back going, we thought this was going to be cinnamon buns, so, the shopping public has, I've got family in Fort Worth. I've got a ton of friends in Fort Worth. Fort Worth been nothing good to me, but good to me. But the amount of people that over the course of the last 15 years that have moved to Fort Worth, that have the experience of travel and the chance to have experienced lots of different foods is different than Dallas. They're more in Dallas. There just are. There's a higher sophisticated palate in Dallas for the most part. Now, that's not to say that people in Fort Worth, there are not a lot of people in Fort Worth that know what they're eating, because there are. But the opportunities there aren't as easy to establish. They're not as easy. It's not as easy to get a following in Fort Worth as it is in Dallas for some of those reasons. And I don't think my friends in Fort Worth would disagree with that. I mean, it's a little more honest. It's a little more country. It's a little bit less frenetic. Dallas, on the other hand, has changed populations probably 10 times in the last 20 years. I mean, the people here have rolled over and rolled over and rolled over. And now we're getting a huge influx of people from the West Coast and from other parts of the country who are coming here for economic reasons. And so with them, they're bringing their experiences. For instance, we opened a Flying Fish in Bentonville, Arkansas. Alice Walton flew me up there a couple of times and swore that this was a place for us to go. And the reason that I believed her is because of her commitment to culture, which she had at Crystal Bridges. But also, Walmart as a whole brought intelligentsia from all over the world to Bentonville, Arkansas, and they got it. You know, we could do something a little bit different, and it wasn't going to be spurned, because they had a lot of sophisticated people that lived in this tiny little town, and they wanted something different. So it turned out to be a good market for us. In Dallas, man, there are people coming from Chicago now. There are people coming. I mean, and when they come with an investment, they're not coming to build a restaurant. They're coming to build five restaurants. And they're high priced, and they have unfortunately been robbing a lot of the locals like myself of their talent. Well, that's okay. It's a free enterprise system. I got to just come up with ways to keep my people where they are. But it does have an impact on everybody that's been here, that's been local for years and years and years, trying to keep staff. Because if somebody's making $20 an hour and somebody comes from Chicago and offers them $25, it's hard to keep them there.
Yeah. It's been a big issue, and one that I know we'll continue to face through the coming months. Listen, I wanted to ask you Did you know Jim White, who recently passed, who founded Restaurant Week?
I did. I was on Jim's show many times. He was always very energetic. He was always very complimentary. He loved to take a tour of the kitchen with a film crew and interview. And he did a lot to bolster people's interest in cooking and foodies and, you know, everything in the community. One thing that's really interesting is one of the things that has propagated our reputations throughout the country a lot is the fact that we're close to the market. And people come in to Medelson Mall that are working market and they tell their friends, and we have, it's just been an incredible thing. They come into the moth, they come into the goat, they come into the fish because they're all in the neighborhood. And, you know, the market center has really done a lot to perpetuate our reputation.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.